She knelt, kissed Drogo on the lips, and pressed the cushion down across his face.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
Well done. Glad you made it all the way through that time.
Yes. So I'm not going to be surprised if my messed up version is our Easter egg.
Oh, no. I think that'll just be the version of the quote I used this time around.
You horrible, horrible man.
I'm going to delete the correct read-through. That's going to be the Easter egg.
So, welcome to another episode of Two Champs and a Chump. My name is Greg Atkinson, and I'm here with my... sometimes co-host. I should rephrase that. I'm the sometimes co-host. He's the always co-host.
I'm the stalwart host. I think the rotating cast gets co-host. At this point, I'm the only person that is just host.
Okay.
I'm the only person to have been in every episode.
So, like...
that caused awkward silence.
You're the...
my bad.
You're the great host of Neo Show, is what you are.
Yes.
Four cost, eight strength. Can't defend against sexual challenges.
I can't. They are my weakness.
For our regular listeners, 2 weeks ago, Will and I discussed a new idea that Will had, which was to introduce a series of objectives for the melee game. Let's just rehash a little bit about why you presented that a couple weeks ago, what your thought pattern was behind... changing things up in terms of, you know, what happens in the midst of a melee game.
Okay. Well,
how it's scored, basically.
Gotcha. Well, in the barest of nutshells from the non-Thrones related stuff, I was listening to the Cardboard of the Rings podcast about Lord of the Rings and trying to think up ways to figure out organized play for Lord of the Rings, which is a co-op game. Thrones is the only other multiplayer LCG that FFG has. So I used some thoughts from that to present them with an idea for a revised scoring system for them that would basically let them kind of reward players for playing cooperatively. And instead of making them, you know, attack each other or anything, they would just get points for their standing for helping each other. Well, I got to thinking about that then the next week, and I thought, well, wait a minute, like... if you can use this kind of point system to encourage certain types of behavior or certain game states, you know, there's nothing that says that you have to encourage a cooperative style of behavior. We've had issues and things in Thrones Melee. What about shifting that back to Thrones and looking at ways to encourage certain behavior in Thrones? And my thought was, if we can figure out some of the right criteria to reward, that can potentially mitigate some of the incentive to collude or to, you know, premeditated or even just unpremeditated kind of team making, just some of the NPE sort of experiences that happen in Melee. So, yeah, my thought was to look at some criteria that could encourage more interactive game states, I guess.
Thank you. And we asked our listeners for feedback of ideas. We said that we were going to come up with a list of up to 12 ideas that would become part of an objective list, and that we were actually going to institute it for our upcoming tournament, the Moon Boy Classic, which happens to be the very first weekend in February, February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, here in Springfield, Missouri at Metagames. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to share some, pretty much share our list. We're going to talk a little bit about maybe some of the ideas that we decided not to use. We appreciate our listeners. We probably had, what, four or five people send in a list of different thoughts, different ideas, different whether they liked it, whether they didn't like it. And so we appreciate all the feedback we got.
Most certainly.
It was very nice. Before we get into our list, I'd like to talk about one thing we chose not to include in the list.
I think it's probably the one I'm thinking of.
Yes. Deal making, deal breaking, deal faking.
Ooh.
We have chosen not to do that. Now, I think from an ideological standpoint, it made perfect sense to make deal making and deal breaking part of our list. But we decided not to do it. Once Will is done with his massive yawn, I was going to ask him, Will, what was some of your reasons behind not wanting to include deal making, deal breaking as part of our list here?
Well, in defense of the yawn, real quick, I haven't had nearly as much caffeine as I usually do. I generally drink coffee through the entire work day, and we only work till noon today, so I didn't get to keep drinking.
I'm so disappointed that you didn't say it's because of my boring host.
That too. My bad.
Okay.
But anyway, basically it just comes down to being too difficult to track what constitutes a deal and what doesn't, and who at the table is deciding what constitutes that deal. You know, I like that it would encourage that, you know, part of the melee game. And I like that there's some stuff potentially collusion related, like, you know, say you're at a table where two guys never make a challenge against each other the entire game. Well, you know, you get to a point in the game where you're stuck trying to figure out, okay, can I check this off as, you know, they've made a deal or something, or whatnot, and who decides that? The two of them may say that there wasn't one. It gets very fuzzy very quickly.
You know, one of the things that turned me off of it was kind of the deal faking. Like, let's say me and you sit at a table and we're friends, and I'm like, let's make a deal. I won't attack you, Will,
yeah,
if you don't do this. But neither of us intend to keep it, and then I attack you first thing. Like, I attack you, Will, but I get 2 points for breaking a deal, yeah. You know? And it's just like, it's just fake, you know? And I think that it's not only hard to track, it's hard to legitimize.
Yeah, it's easier to be abused, probably.
Yes.
Though I really love the idea, Greg kind of touched on it there, because we had a listener write in mentioning awarding like 1 point for making a deal and then 2 points for honoring it and 1 point for breaking it. And I thought the idea of flipping that sounded awesome and giving someone 2 points for breaking it. So then you've got that like terrible dread of, oh my goodness, like when are they going to betray me? But
yeah. So, obviously, we have chosen not to go there with the deal-making. I think several of our listeners even pointed out the same thing. We got a couple emails from them. So, several people said, you know, they'd love for deal-making to be included in the points, but some other people said they think it's just going to be too ambiguous and too difficult to do. And I think at the end of the day, when we were brainstorming our different ideas and talking about it, we pretty much came to the same conclusion. Now, excuse me. One of the things I was thinking about when I decided to begin looking at different ideas is I said, what are we really trying to accomplish? And that's why I kind of wanted you to share the genesis again behind what brought on this idea. But I wanted to ask myself, what are some bullet points that we are really trying to accomplish in this? You know, and the first bullet point...
What is the behavior we're looking for?
Yeah, basically. What's the behavior we're looking for? You know, and the first thing to me is we want interactiveness of as many players at the table as possible. That's a good thing. Now, I played it four-player games where everyone's interactive the whole time, and those are phenomenal games. Those are great games. It's very dynamic. Lots of moving pieces, lots of things. Related to that, one of the things we don't want is we're trying to get rid of collusion. We're trying to look at ideas that are things that will not only prevent the collusion, but are part of the point system that are going to be hard for people to achieve with future collusion as well. Like, people aren't going to be able to say, you know, we can work together and collude to get these easy points as part of the list. So that was part of our thought process as well. A third thing for me was, I know a lot of people that check out of games. Okay, whether it's Joust or Melee games.
I get the feeling you're thinking of me, Greg.
They just check out, and I understand they have the right to do that. But it'd be nice if they have some incentive to stay in a game if they're in fourth place and they're just like, you know what, I'm in fourth. I don't really see how I'm going to get my way out. I'm just going to play Kingmaker and just, I'm going to basically end this game and let so-and-so win and I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, that's not fun. That's not fun kingmaking in my mind. So, you know, we looked at ways to try and keep people in the game as long as possible, being interactive. And a fourth thing that I didn't mention to you when we were talking about
this. Well, that's tricky. Did this bias the whole list and you didn't tell me?
Clearly.
Oh, geez.
A fourth thing, and I don't know if this is going to change any of their minds, but I also, okay, when we talked last week or 2 weeks ago about this, we talked about awarding a point for a victory. And some of our listeners had chimed in and said, look, you need to make, you can't make victory, you can't minimize it, okay? It's still got to be an important part of the process. Oh, totally. And if we minimalized it too much, several of the people who don't like to play Melee and kind of rag on it from time to time to say it's not a competitive game would rag on it that much more and say, I can win a Melee table and I can get last place, you know? And so that was part of my thought process as well, that I still wanted the objectives, for the most part, to be helping you win a game. Okay? Now, yeah, I'm not going to say 100% of the time, but for the most part, they should be moving you towards a win condition.
It's rare, the final list we've set on now, it's rare that you would win the game without having done any of the other items. And even if, heaven forbid, maybe I should be saying seven forbid for this podcast, just thought of that. You win the table and got none of the other points, and someone else got last place and got all of the other points, the best that can happen for them is to tie you.
Yeah. So,
and the odds of that are exceedingly low.
So basically what Will's saying is we have chosen six objective points that in and of themselves are clearly unique objectives. As well, we have instituted 2 points for each person you beat at a table or 1 point for each person you tie. So in an ideal scenario, you could get a total of 12 points. If you got all six objectives, that's 6 points. If you won your table and were at a four-person table, you beat 3 other people, you get another 6 points for the 3 you beat. You'd get 12 points. The in the case of a three-person table, you get 3 points for each person you beat. So if you beat the 2 people there, you get 6 points as well. We got to keep that the same. That is maybe a discussion for another day. I don't know if we'll have time to do it today. We'll see. But some of these, you know, objectives might seem like they're easier in a three-person table. They might also become harder at a three-person table because of the way titles often fall, where if you have 3 people choose and the last person always chooses one, where someone who's already chosen supports them. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're going to see that that's going to factor into this.
You know, so, I was going to say, some of these I think will be very affected by titles. Which I kind of like, that it will push even more focus on carefully choosing which title you've got. If you've got, you know, plots or different ways to interact with those titles, then that gives you some benefit there. Granted, Marcella's already super awesome in Melee, yeah, and this would make her even more awesome depending on the situation, but I'm okay with that.
So as of now, 12 total points, 6 objectives, and 6 total if
six
you win your
victory
table.
Points.
Yeah, six
or whatever.
Six victory points available. All right, so drum roll, please. Objective number one. This was the consensus. I don't think anybody didn't request this one.
I believe you're right.
Number one, defend for someone you support and win the challenge. Now, some people might have said just defend for someone you support. You know, yeah. We wanted to put defend and win. So, if you defend for someone that you support and win, you get an objective point.
Yeah, which, I don't know, looking at kind of the criteria that we'd set out for there, that encourages interaction quite a bit, because I think the supporting mechanic is very underused in 90% of the games that I play. I pretty much only ever see
from that aspect, from the defend for aspect, not yes, the I yes, can't sorry. I can't attack this person aspect.
Right, right. You know, I just occasionally see it pop up, mainly in the situation where it wins the game, where somebody forgets that the other person can defend, that person defends for them with, you know, their three renowned guys and wins the game because, mm-hmm. you know, basically the rest of us weren't properly looking at the board situation. And that's about the only time I ever see it used. So this would, I think, potentially encourage people to do that much earlier in the game and have that happen a little more. So I dig that for sure.
I agree. I've always liked it and always underutilized it. The few times I've even built a deck where I thought, like, I had a Martell Vengeful deck where I actually wanted to defend and trigger my own Taste for Bloods and my own lose the challenge stuff. Now, in that case, I'm not necessarily winning the challenge. I'm defending and trying to lose. But I would still forget it in a deck that was designed to use it. So I hopefully will see some additional use of that aspect of the mechanic. And that's a good thing. You know, what we're trying to do is highlight an existing mechanic of the game and reward people for using it.
Right. Okay, so that touches on how it helps with interactiveness, I guess. And then our other criteria, collusion mitigation. And honestly, I'm sorry, now I've forgotten what the third one was, even though we were just talking about it.
Helping someone in last place. Or people who might have checked out of the game.
Underdog.
Yeah.
So how does this relate to the other two then? I can see how it connects to the underdog stuff, where if you're the guy getting beat down on, it gives somebody that supports you a reason to step in your defense. So that helps somebody from being just obliterated as often.
Right. Not only that, but someone who's in last place may choose to support and win a challenge just so they can get an objective point.
Mm-hmm.
They're, instead of checking out of the game, they're at least interacting in the game in such a way that they're doing something. Okay. Now, in terms of collusion, I don't necessarily think it's going to prevent collusion, but at the same time, there is now a reason for you to defend for someone who you might not have gone into the game being friends with before the game started. You know,
yeah.
Like, let's say I sit at a table with you and, you know, even though you and I beat on each other regularly in Melee games, but, you know, let's just say we decide we're going to work together, right? You know?
That would last for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, hypothetical.
Hypothetical, yes. So, you know, but we're sitting at a table with, you know, some other guy and he's just kind of, you know, doesn't have much on the board. His character's gotten removed or whatever. And, you know, you're throwing an unopposed challenge at him. And, you know, I'm like, huh, you know, I can defend and win. And, you know, not only maybe help my position on the table via renown or some other, you know, win a challenge cards or responses.
Right.
You know, I'm potentially even slowing you down. Even if you are a friend, maybe, you know, maybe I'm not ready for you to win the game yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it encouraging that behavior. If I'm, can I step out of the hypothetical now?
Yeah,
that's exactly what you would do in the real world. I wish I could remember how many times you've stopped the challenge that I was about to make to win the game.
So now the question is are people going to use this to support someone that they're friends with? And they potentially could.
Right.
But I don't think
it's
anyone...
harder, I think, the way titles work and initiative and stuff, I think it's harder for two people to always make sure they get the titles that support each other to do that.
Yeah, and likewise, I mean, you're not going to go into a tournament or even a game saying, dude, every time someone attacks you and it's going to be unopposed, I am jumping in. I am going for it, dude.
I'm throwing myself in front of that bus. Dude, sorry you about could set up like a Secret Service or a Kingsguard, if you will, willing to lay down their characters in your defense.
I cannot wait till you watch the last episode of this season's...
The League?
The League. Okay. Because Rafi becomes Ruxin's ballsy guard.
Awesome.
I literally was going to force you to watch it, even though I know you're not caught up there, but it's just so good, I was going to force you to watch it anyways. But we don't have time, because we're going to have to go to the store.
But, you know, that's actually kind of funny, because we had talked about giving these all Thrones-related names to signify them and kind of make it easier to keep track of what's what. And I hadn't, you know, we hadn't gotten as far as doing that because we were running out of time and wanted to actually record. But I think Kingsguard is
I would just call it the
nice
Barristan.
That one. The Barristan?
Yeah, I would call it the Barristan. Basically, what Will is saying is we'd like to give each of our objectives a unique name. We can call it the Kingsguard, but honestly, some of the Kingsguard don't defend very well. But yeah. Barristan, on the other hand, he does.
Sort of. The only king he had to defend lost the war.
Well, then we're not calling it the Kingsguard. We're calling it the Barristan. You know, he did prevent Dany from getting stung by a manticore jumping in. And
he protected
you know,
the queen. There we
yeah,
go.
Yeah. So that's why I'm calling it the Barristan, because he's a defensive guy. So, and he... Okay. Anyways.
Yeah. Oh, well. Moving on.
Okay. No... I will say this, our listeners, this is how we can really appreciate some more of your interaction, is if you have some unique names to apply to each of our objectives, that'd be great. And after the game, someone can say, I got the Barristan, I got the Pip, I got the Jon Snow, you know, I got the Daenerys, whatever
the
happens to
said.
Be. Yeah, you know, I got the Tower of Joy, so...
I think that's what happens afterward at the bar with Bruno.
So, anyways, please send in your thoughts once we're done with sharing our full list with you, Sharon. Send in your thoughts on what you would, you know, maybe name each of our objectives.
Sure thing.
Objective number two.
Win a challenge against each opponent in the same round. Now, this is one that will be slightly easier, probably, at a two-player table, unless you get screwed by supporting, in which case you won't be able to challenge one of the other players, potentially. So we debated that back and forth, whether it would actually be easier or harder. I don't know. But it does encourage you to spread the love around, so to speak.
Well, notice we also did not say offensively. We just said win a challenge. So you can win one defensively as well.
Yeah. Potentially you could win one defensively by defending for the person you support.
Yes.
And get two objective points off the same challenge.
Yes.
Potentially.
So that interaction does exist. The idea here, you know, again, getting back to our reasons, you know, three challenges against, or win a challenge against each opponent in the same round. So you're spreading the love around. You know, this isn't a, I'm going to beat down on one person, or I'm not going to attack my friend, you know, that sort of thing.
It helps both the underdog quotient and the collusion factor together right there.
Yes.
And interaction. This is probably the one that encapsulates all three of our criteria the easiest,
yes.
I think.
Yes. All right. So the next one is similar, but with one major difference. Lose a challenge against each opponent in the same round. Now, earlier we talked about all of these objectives. We really wanted to encourage winning the game. This is the one objective that looks like you're not trying to win the game, okay? Because you're losing a challenge. But it's got to be against each opponent. So, like, if you're trying to king make... by say, I'm going to lose a challenge against so-and-so, they have four renown on the board, I'm just going to attack them and they're going to win the game.
Right.
You know, unless you've already lost two challenges against each of your other two opponents, you're not accomplishing anything. You know, this is a little deeper Okay, number one, it does help the person who's maybe down and out and their board's been kind of cleared and everyone's picking on them and saying, I'm going to get easy power by attacking them. Well,
yeah, it's not fun when you're the guy just getting farmed.
So, you know, if you're getting farmed, you're getting a point for it if each person is farming you, okay? But also, I think it provides some interesting interaction because now people are going to have to start thinking about that. You know, thinking about, you know, oh, has this person already lost two challenges this round? Do I even attack?
From two different people.
Yeah, from two different people. From two different people. Do I even attack them for fear of just giving them an objective point at my table? You know, or vice versa. Do I, if they've already lost two challenges, now they're attacking me, crap. Do I defend and win?
That's the one that I like. It puts that last person in a tricky spot of, well, if they defend and win, they're giving a point away. If they defend and lose or don't defend and lose either way, then they've got to deal with the claim issue and everything. Yeah, that's the interaction that I really like.
Yeah, and I don't know how you could even tie this to collusion at all. I mean, I don't know how, you know, how collusion could be involved with
potentially
someone.
The underdog thing. You know, if a couple people have made a deal to just go after someone.
Right.
Before a deal outside.
No, I'm just saying it thwarts someone. A little collusion. What I'm saying is no aspect of it that would encourage any collusion.
Right. Okay,
whatsoever.
Sorry. I thought you meant how it interacted with the thwarting.
Oh, no, no. It clearly does
criterion.
That.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so we're on to number four?
On to number four.
All right. Win three challenges against opponents who have more power than you.
Yes. Now, here's where this is different than number two, where it just said win a challenge against each opponent in the same round. This one is win three challenges against opponents. It could be the same person, okay? I mean, if one person's sitting at 12 and you're sitting at 2 and you're like, you know, I'm just going to go after this person, military intrigue power, do it. And if you're successful, you're not only helping yourself win the game, you're helping bring someone else down.
Yeah, it gives even more incentive to turn on whoever's in the lead.
Yes.
And disincentivizes, again, farming somebody.
Yes, that's behind you in the game.
Right.
Now, I want to bring up an interesting point about this. This says, win three challenges against opponents who have more power than you. When does that more power come into play? Like, when are we going to say they have more power? Because if you win a power challenge and steal a couple power from someone, you might then have more power than them after that. So when are we going to clarify this?
Well, this within actually, the timing? It's the same timing for all of them here that are challenge related, but this is the one that it really matters for.
Okay.
But just so folks know, it's the same timing for all of them. We are going to say that the objective points occur at winner determination before claim. So it will be the very first thing that happens once a winner has been determined. So it's going to be before claim, it's going to be before keywords, it's going to be before responses, before anything else. Basically, for the situation Greg was hinting at, so that, say, I'm attacking the guy that's in the lead and throwing all three challenges at him, you know, and maybe I do it a different order or whatever, one of my challenge. Well, okay, sorry. The order doesn't really matter. I'm getting beside myself there. Any of them being a power challenge, just say they're at 11 and I'm at 10.
Mm-hmm.
This being the first thing before claim means I just won against him while he was still at 11. Then I move the power and I move up to 11.
Yes. Yes. Another thing we didn't mention, which we should have mentioned at the beginning, is we are going to be instituting a rule for all these objectives that at the point in time that you either accomplish the objective or in the case of these challenge ones during the timing before claim, you have to announce it.
Right.
Okay? You can't, like, we can't be in the dominance. You're like, oh man, I just lost three challenges, you know, against three different people. I get it. Nuh-uh. You have to do it at that point in time.
They are, yeah. Yeah. I was about to say they're effectively all responses, but that would screw up the way that
yes.
people think of the timing. They are not responses, but they are mays. We'll put it that way.
They are what?
You may abilities.
Oh, okay.
You may get this objective point.
They
are not, you know, absolute must-have things like renown or opposing power.
I want to call it claiming an objective, but I don't even want the word claim in there to
exactly.
confuse it with claim as much as just accomplishing an objective.
Yeah.
Okay, so at the point in time you accomplish the objective, you have to state, I accomplished this objective. Everyone at the table will, I don't know, nod or punch you for doing it, something. And then you will have little scorecards or something that you'll put a mark down and say, you know, I just got the Barristan. So, so back to the timing of any of the challenge phase ones, particularly if it's specific to... I
mean, they're all challenge related.
Okay, right.
Yeah, it's just that the ones that involve multiple opponents will only trigger at the last challenge necessary.
Yes. So, so in this particular case, obviously we're encouraging interactiveness. We are hopefully discouraging, you know, people, you know, discouraging the collusion by, you know, telling people, hey, if your friend's in first place, go for him. If you're the one in second place, otherwise you cannot get this objective.
Yeah, and potentially discourages kingmaking too, as far as there's a lot of situations now where I'm in second and you're in first or, you know, whatever it might be, and I'd be like, okay, you know, go ahead and win this challenge and, you know, the game's over. Or now I think there's more, that extra little bit of incentive, not only the victory points like there already are currently, but under this, there would also be incentive for the objective point here to turn on whoever's in the lead rather than just letting them go ahead and take the victory while you can.
I'd even been at a table when I was playing against two people that I knew were working together. And sometimes you almost end up working with them almost in the sense that you're like, you know what, it's going to just be easier to farm the fourth person than it is to go after the first two. And what we're doing here is if you're the third person, now you have some incentive instead of just to almost secure your third place, you know. Now you have a little bit of incentive to say, you know what, I'm going to go after that first and second person. If I can win these three challenges against either of them,
then... Yeah, all three wouldn't have to be against the same person.
Yeah, it does not have to be the same person.
So if you're in fourth... You can win one against each.
Yes, absolutely. You just have to win three challenges against opponents who have more power than you. And each of those challenges, the person who has to have the more power than you. For instance, if you're winning the third one against the person who is in first place and your power total is crept up by four by the time you're winning that third one, you don't have to look and say, oh man, now I have more than the person in second place, therefore I don't get to count the challenge against them, which there might be a little bit of record keeping with this one. I mean, particularly if you think you're going to go for it in a round, you might have to say, and I mean, no one likes to telegraph it, but you might have to say, okay, you know, I just beat John, you know, who's in third place and I'm in fourth place and he has more power than me at the time, particularly if you recognize by the time you're done with your challenges, you will have leapfrogged him.
Frog leapt.
Something.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, number five.
Number five. Is it my turn to read? I think it is.
Yeah, I believe so.
Lower an opponent's power total during a challenge where you are not the attacker or defender.
Yeah. I mean, now that this one winds up being, I think, a little more specific than some of the others.
Yes.
Because it winds up being specific to removal effects.
Well, not necessarily. Power removal, character removal. Yes. Okay.
Greg's trying to think of more. Okay, so that actually, that's, I mean, right.
But there are a lot of power removal cards in the game, too. So, I mean, more than what people realize, both from house and from characters.
Yeah. But by and large, this is going to wind up being bouncing or killing.
Unless you're playing Lannister. Slander and lies.
Right. If you can slander and lie someone, then have an any phase ability that you can trigger in the middle of this other challenge that needs gold, yes. I'm not sure offhand what that one would wind up being.
Kraylin!
Well, Kraylin's a response to winning the challenge. So, unfortunately, Kraylin won't work if we've established that the timing of all of these...
No, this one is not different because you're not winning or losing. So, this one would last through the end of the challenge, and the end of a challenge is through the end of all responses.
Okay.
A challenge is not considered over until all responses to that challenge have been played.
Okay.
So, the other ones, the reason why they're different is because they're about winning and losing. Okay, so we had to establish a time frame within the framework action window of when do you claim that you've won or lost all these, okay? This particular one, lower an opponent's power total during a challenge where you do not have participating character, where you are not an attacker or defender, mm-hmm. okay, will last through the end of those response effects.
So it is itself essentially a response then.
Claiming the objective point, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
As far as when, I mean, because if it doesn't have the same timing as the others,
it does.
Folks need to know when to time this one. And effectively, it then should also be a response.
Yes, because I would like to see things like Red Vengeance in here, where you're attacking me and John throws in a Red Vengeance so that your military goes against the other person on the board. Okay, or he has the other person, the fourth person on the board's got to satisfy the military claim is what I mean.
Right.
And all he has is renowned characters on the board. So yes, now...
Okay, so you would count... Now, this one, it didn't occur to me when we were discussing it before, so I probably should have said it pre-podcast, but for clarification, you would count Red Vengeance and assumably then also now my brain
should have
the Lanny event. Yeah, Double Bluff.
Look at that, a Lanny event that costs gold to spend with slander and lies?
Now,
what would that be?
Hold on. Now, I'm not involved in this challenge. All I did was...
You're not the attacker or defender.
I altered claim. I didn't do anything to power.
As
the person who has claim did something to power. I should have brought that up when we were discussing it before.
Maybe, well, the way we've worded the objective now is lower an opponent's power total. And
so I guess, it would not work.
Well, then what? No. What I would say is trigger an effect or play a card that lowers an opponent's power total. I mean, that's essentially...
I still feel... Like I said, I should have brought this up before. I still feel that's pushing it as far as rules definitions go. That affects claim. I mean, as far as Red Vengeance.
Claim replacement has always been that hairy little...
It's been established that claim is something hairy little, separate.
Yeah, it's kind of the red-headed stepchild of immunity and effects. You know, claim replacement has always been this weird anomaly to it, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe Red Vengeance is just like the worst example in the world to choose.
Yeah. And Double Bluff by extension. The two function very similarly in this setting. So do you agree with me that as unfortunate as it is, the easiest wording is to leave it so that those claim replacement effects do not work for this particular objective?
Well, what if I played Winter is Coming and you are a Stark character attacking someone else and I've now raised your claim?
Again, you affected my claim. I had the claim. I moved power.
What if we change the wording to play or reveal a card that results in someone's power total going down?
Okay, now that starts getting pretty hairy. Now, if you've got five characters on the board and three of them have renown, and I flip Valor Margolis, do you want to count that?
Well, that doesn't. Because... it's not within a challenge, so that one wouldn't work.
Okay, fair enough. Now, unless you had nobles and it was summer and you used that Martell event,
then yes, I would want it to work because that would be freaking awesome in a melee game.
yes, it would. Or a rookery.
Yes, switch into yes, Valor. I do want that to work. Yes.
Okay.
To answer your question, I want far out crazy interaction that causes power changes, or in this case, really lowering an opponent's power total in some way, that you are not the attacker or defender.
Okay, so yeah, the rookery idea isn't going to work, actually. But potentially scheming on the sands, yes.
Why would the rookery not work?
Because...
Oh, you have to lose.
Well, most of them are if you lose.
Yeah,
well,
you're right. You have to lose. Half. Okay.
Yeah. The other ones are win, so yeah, it's not going to work either way. Okay, so in the end then, that's reveal or play a card whose effect would
Reveal, play, or trigger a card, because it could be something already on the board.
Reveal, play, or trigger a card whose effect would result in
an opponent's loss of power total. During a challenge where you are not the attacker defender.
Whew.
I know it's wordy.
We've got to come up with a way to streamline that wording before we actually write down this checklist.
You just did.
I don't know if it gets any better than that. I was going to say, I'm still not sure if that's the best, but I'll keep thinking. Because I assume I'm going to be trying to type up the checklists.
Yeah, well, I assume that, you know, on the day that our podcast goes out, we'll put this on.
Yeah, if somebody has ideas on the best way to word that so that it works for what Greg wants, let us know. Okay, Tom, if you're listening, help us.
Yeah,
you're our only hope. Okay, so number six.
Well, let's talk real quickly. Let's talk about what that does, though, you know, with respect to our objectives of what we're trying to accomplish.
Sure.
Obviously, you can tell by our discussion, it is highly interactive. That's what I'm trying to promote, is a large quantity of interaction, even in the challenges, or especially in the challenges you're not in. You're mucking with things, okay? You are changing that. And the reason why I chose lower power total, with the idea being that you are still trying to win the game, so you're trying to lower someone else's power total in the process of doing that. You know, in terms of thwarting collusion, I mean, I don't know.
I don't think that one necessarily connects.
Yeah, I don't think it does.
I think interaction is the main thing that this one hits on. I don't feel it hits on the underdog aspect.
Oh, I definitely think it does.
Well, as much as interaction, because, you know, someone's losing some power, and assumably, if you're in last place, you're not going to be the person who's losing power. But the potential is there that someone could screw your renowned character in the middle of a challenge, and you'll be even more in last place.
Yeah. But I think the person in last place will have incentive to muck with other people's challenges.
Oh, yeah.
Again, where before, a person in last place checks out of a game. Now, ooh, man, if I blow up this character, if I do claim replace or claim change, if I, you know, if I give someone deadly that results in, you know, a character with power dying from deadly, you know, then...
I do like the thought of giving opponents characters deadly.
Well...
That's one of my favorite things.
We're about to get to that.
Oh, I know.
We're about to get to that. All right, point six, Mr. Will Lynch.
Okay, the sixth and final objective... Add or remove a keyword or icon from a character during a challenge in which you're not the attacker or defender.
Okay. So this is kind of similar to five. Again, mm-hmm. We are trying to encourage people doing stuff when they are not in the challenge, but they are affecting the game state, hopefully helping their own board position. Okay. By adding or removing keywords or icons. Now, of course, some people are going to already say, well, didn't that happen, Gen Con or World Championships this year? All the people with the Scourge decks that were removing icons, you know, and yes. But keep in mind that they were, A, often doing it before challenges even got started. Okay, they were like, people that would work together were often taking the other two people at the table and just removing their icons before things even, before the first challenge was even initiated. This we have specifically said during a challenge. So right. In the case where two people happen to bring an icon removal deck, you know, and they want to work together, they're not going to get a point
One of them would have to throw away their challenge. Like, assumably they would have to be first player.
Yeah.
Initiate a challenge. Now they are not, since they are the attacker, they're not eligible for this point.
Yeah.
But then that would open it up for the two of them to start the Scourge stuff. But then the other player would get the point. So they would be giving points away if they were to do that.
Yeah.
Now, offhand, that's pretty specific to that kind of deck type. And I don't want it to seem like we're just specifically trying
to
handle
that
deck type.
No, but that's... I just wanted to make that point because I think people would bring it up. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why, you know, that's why we specifically put that caveat in there, you know, in a challenge where you are not the attacker or defender. You know, now, we've just mentioned icons. The part that you mentioned that you're excited about is keyword.
Oh, yeah.
Adding and removal.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's already folks that want to remove renown on opponents' characters
sure.
to slow them down. And that's perfectly reasonable. What happens less often, even when I build decks to try and do it. I frequently don't get around to actually doing it. But I think this would be the extra bit of encouragement I need to keep it on my mind, is to give keywords to opponents' characters. Like, when someone attacks with somebody and the other guy defends with, I don't know, their Fat Bob that they are just dead set on claiming an extra 2 power with and they're excited about, well, now you have even more incentive to go ahead and give that attacker deadly.
Yeah. Now, in these two...
Or intimidate. It's another one I see giving out.
The 6 and 5, let's talk about timing on these a little bit, okay? Because these, what you're really looking for in number 5 is you're looking for the power total being lowered. At that point in time, you've hit your trigger, your response trigger. Okay, same thing with 6. At the point in time a keyword or an icon has been added or removed, you've hit your response trigger. But we've also put the caveat in there where you are not the attacker or defender. So what this allows for is the narrow window of supporting. Okay, it still allows for that in the sense that, let's say I support you, Will, okay, and John attacks you, and I then use, I don't know, Frozen Moat on his attacking character to remove his deadly keyword. I get a point. Now,
so blanking does count as removing.
Yes, because it's still removing. If we put stealing in there, obviously that's too specific, like Arya would be stealing. Okay. But in this case, blanking is still removing. If it was on there and now it's not, no matter how it's not on there, it's removed.
Okay.
But now, the point is that blank has to happen in the midst of the challenge.
Right.
If someone's revealed fortified position during the plot phase, they don't get to say they removed your keyword during the challenge phase. It was removed during the plot phase.
Now, if, though, they could play Scheming on the Sands mid-challenge,
yes,
to reveal fortified position.
Yes. Yes.
Scheming on the Sands.
So back. In this
part, I am building you.
For our objectives 5 and 6, at the point in time you've accomplished it by removing power or adding or removing an icon or keyword, you say, I have now done this. I get my objective point for it. And if someone then wants to say, or in the scenario I was just about to present, if I say, I want to now defend for you, Will, now that I've removed John's deadly keyword, I can. And now if I win the challenge, I potentially get another point.
Right.
Okay. So these last two, there is that support scenario where you could defend for someone, you know, but you would have to either lower the power total or add or remove a keyword or icon before you've done the supporting.
Right.
Okay, so you would also have to do it before they declare defenders. Because, well, is there an opportunity? We might have to parse out some framework actions. You know, like, let's say you say there's no defenders, right?
Okay.
Is me choosing to support for you actually a player action?
You know, I'm not dead certain on the timing of that particular one. I don't know offhand that there's been anything that cared about that exact timing before.
Well, there is an opportunity for player actions after defenders have been declared. So if you say no defenders, we do all have an opportunity for player actions. So I would say
that gives you the question of whether using a title support is a player action in that window, or if it's a framework action that replaces it. Kind of like the Crown Regent redirect winds up playing as a framework action, if I recall correctly, to the challenge being, or as part of the challenge being initiated, so that you don't have people like, I don't declare I'm attacking Greg, people trigger a few things, and then I use the Crown Regent and send it somewhere else, and people trigger some more stuff.
Really? You can't do that?
I thought this came up at Tulsa, where somebody was going to challenge me, and I had a Euron, and then I had a Crown Regent, and I wanted to redirect it.
I don't remember. I thought you guys declared Euron triggered twice.
No, I thought. Okay. Well, this is what I get.
I don't remember.
I thought in the end that what they looked up was that Euron wouldn't wind up triggering, if I'm remembering the entire situation right. I could be remembering wrong.
Listeners, feel free to correct me.
Well, here's why I think there should be an opportunity for player actions. I don't know if that's if the supporting counts or not. Potentially, someone could attack you, and you could defend, right? And then someone else lowers your strength by 3. It's now considered an unopposed challenge, right?
Not until actual challenge resolution, though, because something else could pump the strength.
That's my point. So technically, you can't support for someone if they defend with a character at all.
That would be my assumption, yes.
Okay. So, maybe in the way we look at, excuse me, timing here, using our scenario, I support you, John attacks you, I remove his keyword deadly, or his deadly keyword, excuse me, and you declare no defenders. I think if we probably follow Crown Regent, yep. At that point in time, there's no opportunity for action.
I think it's got to be
if I'm going to support. So it's not like he could attack you, you declare no defenders, and then I say, ooh, now I'm going to remove that keyword and support for you. You know, it would have to happen during the player action window before you declare defenders.
Right. And the part of why I'm agreeing that I think that it's going to have to happen that way, and especially as far as the timing of the support defense goes, is connected to what you're talking about having a character in it. Because I'm pretty certain supporting defense doesn't work where, say, you're attacking me. Say we're both playing our Lanny decks, and you're attacking me, whatever. I defend with my Castellan, and then you use Tollgate and stand and remove the Castellan. Bob, next to me, that supports me, then doesn't have the chance to use his support defense afterwards.
Yeah.
Even though I have zero characters in the challenge at that point. I'm pretty sure it's got to be part of the framework there.
Okay. We might have to look that up, though, just to get clarification, particularly since we are now creating new objectives
now,
that interact.
Now that we're forcing things to interact with it, yeah.
So, folks, there's our 6 new objectives that we would like to introduce, at least here locally, into our Melee game, see how it plays. Now, let me say this. We got a lot of other good ideas. You know, people were talking about winning 3 challenges with the same character. People,
stuff they cared about, whose house.
Yeah, winning against the same house, winning against a different house, playing some of the Melee-specific cards.
I liked that idea.
I know, Will liked that idea, and I didn't like that. But not that I don't want people to play those cards, but I'd rather this be a result of interaction, not forcing interaction.
Not a result of specific, like, deck building.
Yes.
Because none of these right now depend on deck building.
Not really. Unless you're Daryl and then he sucks. So lose the challenge against 3 opponents is kind of related to Daryl's deck building.
Yeah, fair enough. You know. But he'd never remember to trigger the objective.
Good point. Excellent point. We got a lot of good ideas. We thought about going more than 6. At the end of the day, I think 6 is a very healthy place to be because 50% of the objective points related to a Melee, or 50% of the points related to a Melee game are going to be these objectives. The other 50% are related to beating people at your table.
Yeah. Roughly then 50% interaction, 50% domination.
Yes. And now we've already pointed out of our objectives, most of them should be helping you win the game anyways, okay? So hopefully, if you're doing these, you're winning the game or preventing other people from winning the game.
Yep.
So I think that that's a good thing. We don't want to thwart people from winning. We don't want to disincentivize that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if adding these objectives are going to help any of the general naysayers that are like, Melee sucks. They may still say, oh, this is stupid, whatever, you know.
So I think some of them may even complain just because now 100% of the criteria isn't domination, right? Because a lot of those people are the Joust players that are frequently heavy control players that they just want to walk into the game, dominate, like, dictate everything that happens. And that's why they don't like Melee, is that they don't get to dictate everything. Well, now, half of the points that we're awarding are actually even not for dictating what happens.
Okay. Now,
so, I don't know.
one of the people on the boards asked me about how the point system was going to work in terms of winning tables and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure exactly.
I meant to answer him.
Yeah.
And instead, all I did was say something about how many people downloaded the podcast. Wow, that makes me sound really conceited.
Well, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Weren't you calling yourself the great host when this started?
No, you called me the great host. I just said I'm the only host.
I think you
everyone else is a
co-host. You called yourself the eternal host. That's what you
said. Something
did.
Like that, yeah, probably.
Okay, so anyways, right now, at a table, you have first, second, third, and last, but those first, second, third, and last gets turned into points, okay? Like, if you win a table, you get, I think, or yours, if you win a table, you get 10 points now, okay? Well, all we're doing is we are doing a new translation into points. Now, if you win a table, you get 6 plus whatever objectives you get. So what's going to happen is after a game is scored, or after a round is finished, you will score yourself, okay? The judge will come by, and you'll say, I got the Barristan and the, you know, and the Eddard and the whatever.
I figure it's way more easy that you just hand them the checklist.
That's fine. You hand them your sheet, and you've got 4 checklists plus your total points. Let's say 4. So you got 8 points. Okay, then all the tournament organizer is going to do is take all the participants, reorder them based on the points they got in the first round, and then do the true Swiss seeding like we are now doing in Melee tournaments. And now you have your second round tables based on how you scored in the first round. Okay, and then you'll have your second round scores. Then now you're going to have a total of points from 2 different rounds. Let's say you have 15 points after 2 rounds. So you should be in the third round, you should be sitting at a table with people that are very close to 15 points, 15, 16, 14 around there, because we're doing true Swiss seeding. So
sure,
it's going to be just the same in terms of how the tournament is paired, okay, or how the Swiss pairings follow. It's still going to be based on how many points you have. What we're doing is simply introducing a slightly different translation into points. Instead of being 100% how you finish at your table, now it's 50% how you finish at your table, plus 50% of your ability to accomplish these objectives.
I'm down with it. I'm excited to see how it works.
Yeah, so someone could potentially say, like, I can come up to you and say, how'd you do in the first round? And you could say, well, I got 2nd on my table, but I accomplished 4 objectives, so I got 8 points, which actually happened to be tied for the most at my table, because the guy who won the table only got 2 objectives, so he had 8 points as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just going to be a slightly different discussion. And now someone might argue and say, great, now we have someone who got 2nd place at a table who has got the same points as someone who got 1st place. Well, so be it. We recognize that that is a scenario that will happen with these objectives. We've just hopefully introduced objectives that still encourage winning a table, encourage interaction, disincentivizing or discourage the collusion, as well as hopefully keeping everyone at a table engaged for as long as possible.
Indeed.
Wrap it up, bitch.
Wow, is that what you're saying instead of props and slops this week? Because, I mean, that's what the listeners are going to hear instead of props and slops.
Are we not going to do props and slops? I actually have a prop.
Oh, no, we are. No, I just meant instead of just announcing that we were going down to props and slops.
Oh, or they could just listen to this 1-minute interlude of us discussing whether we're going to say props and
slops. Oh, no, that's going to disappear. They're just going to hear, wrap it up, bitch. And then we're going to talk about
all
props
right,
and slops.
Then, since I'm the one that said that, get started.
Oh, I have to get started?
Yeah, I told
you're
you
the
wrap
one
it
that
up,
actually
bitch.
Said you had some. Oh, okay. Boy, what
I do
am I going to do? I'm going to throw out some... Actually, I'm adding a new category. I'm throwing out meh to the new 52. I had been already following some of the DC Comics new 52 stuff, Batwoman and Batgirl and whatnot. And so I've been trying to catch up on some of the other ones now that they've had a little over a year to figure out what they're doing with some of the characters. And I'm torn. They're doing a decent job of making Aquaman kind of cool, which is kind of cool. But... You know, like I was reading the Action Comics run currently, and boy, I'm torn on that. They've depowered Superman a bit, which I'm kind of
meh about. They've killed both of his parents now before the series starts, and I'm not so much a fan of that. And Lois and even Superman are not interested in each other. Superman's after Wonder Woman, and there's some weirdness there. I don't know. I'm back and forth.
So you're not giving a proper slop. You're just giving
I'm giving a meh. I guess the jury's still out. I'm not certain. I'm working on it. I'll give a final verdict later after I've done considerably more reading.
Okay. So it's not a proper flop. It's not a stop.
Yeah, it's I kind of cheated on that one, basically. It's a status update. It's a progress note.
Okay. My prop goes to Torchlight 2, which Sandman and I have been playing and just having a ton of fun doing it. I'll play, solo, but we also get online and play, multiplayer with each other. The game scales for multiplayer. It's just a lot of fun. For those that don't play, computer games, Torchlight 2 is just a dungeon crawl / looting game. And it's kind of in the Diablo cycle. The people who created the Torchlight series spun off from the Diablo group. I don't know the names.
Blizzard.
Of the company. Blizzard, and now they're Runic or something. Like, I don't know the
name. That sounds right. I don't remember the Torchlight company.
We have a lot of fun doing it. It's really good. So I've got a multitude of different characters. So if anyone plays, let me know. And we can get online and blow stuff up.
I love blowing things up.
I know.
Props to anybody that... Yeah, there we go. There's some props. Props to anybody that got my reference right now. If you can write in and tell me what I was quoting in response to Greg, I will mention you in the next podcast.
Expendables?
Nope.
Ocean's 11.
I fudged it a little. I think it's I love blowing things up.
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening to us, folks.
I can't do it like Zyler.
Thank you, Zoom!
Much better.